there. So welcome to my YouTube channel. My name is Kingsley Okonkwo. And hey, we're in the Valentine period. We're in the love season. All right. So no, there's no better time to talk about love than now. Love and heartbreaks. All right. Because from my experience, these periods are just interesting. Some people are going to find out that they are not the main chick this period. Some people are going to find out that they are the side chick this period. So it's going to be very interesting. But hey, we're here to help. We're here to give you knowledge, give you help as much as we can. And I have a very, 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 very special guest in the house today. We have a video together on how love affects the brain. And today, we're also going to talk about how heartbreaks affect the brain.
Yes,
Right? How heartbreaks affect the brain. I didn't know heartbreak can affect the brain. No, I think I know because some people behave after heartbreak. You know that their brain is just. But sorry if you're facing heartbreak. Hey, sorry, I know somebody must have sent you this video after your heartbreak. But hey, we're here to help. How heartbreak affects the video. And I have with me Dr. Tolu Binotu.
Yes.
Binotu. Dr. Tolu Binotu. He's a medical doctor, he's also a psychiatrist in training. And he's also a social media influencer, so most of you already know his face. So welcome to
Thank you for
this
having me. It's a pleasure being here.
episode. All right. So first of all, I didn't know breakfast. You know, when they say it's the most important meal of the day, we do know how much it affects the brain. But you know, how does heartbreak affect the brain, and how does it affect
It's first of all, thank you for having me here. It's an honor being here with you again. Yeah, it can. Absolutely can. And the way it works is, first of all, so do you know heartbreak can actually break the heart?
Wow.
Like when people say they have died from a broken heart, it can actually happen. It's a kind of cardiomyopathy. It's something where the heart becomes, due to the emotional stress of going through something like someone losing. You may have heard stories of maybe someone lost. The son had been married for 40 years and lost the wife, and a few weeks after,
they just passed on.
Died
Wow.
From a heart
from
condition.
His own days after.
Yes, because what happens, I'm trying to remember, it has a Japanese name. It skipped my mind now, but it's a kind of cardiomyopathy. And what happens is the emotional duress or stress of something, commonly losing a partner, causes the heart not to work as well as it does, should, or as well as it used to. And that ultimately, if it isn't caught on time, or because it actually stresses the muscles of the heart and can lead to a broken heart. So heartbreak can affect the heart, and it also affects the brain. In fact, the way people react to heartbreaks, even if you study it across cultures, there seems to be some similarity. In as much as they may not speak the same language, they may not have grown up under the same conditions, but because the brain generally in human beings is the same, the reaction to losing love or being heartbroken can be quite similar as well. So what happens is, maybe I'll just talk briefly on how love affects the brain, although we did that in our last session, before I go, because that will help those who may not have watched the first video to understand this. So when we fall in love, when we fall in love, we tend to even look at do a functional MRI. That's a brain scan of people who are actively in love. We notice that there is a surge of some chemicals, most especially something called dopamine. Now, dopamine is a feel-good hormone. Dopamine is usually released by parts of the brain in what we call the reward circuitry. I will not want to go into so much detail. It's just the important things. And dopamine is also, I mean, because of dopamine and because of the way it's released, and love makes us feel good, love affects us in the way that cocaine actually affects us, in a very similar way. And when love is lost, that means when maybe heartbreak, maybe due to a breakup or maybe due to loss of partner or whatever it is that is responsible, it leads to a yearning for what's been lost. In fact, one thing we notice with heartbreaks is, for someone who is heartbroken, or you may say that many of them tend to remember only the good parts of the relationship, especially if maybe they broke it off. Maybe they spoke to a counselor or something and then found out, okay, this person is probably not the best person for me, and they break it off. with the first maybe 1-2 weeks, they are reasoning properly. Yeah. They know why they did it. They know it was the good decision, the right decision to make. Give them a couple of months. All this time, remember, is how this person used to bring food for them in the office, or how this person's voice was sweet, or the smell of his perfume, or the scent of her food in the kitchen, or her voice, or maybe they may. I mean, there was still a lady, or this happens commonly, just driving and then you hear a song, and maybe it was the song playing in your first date, and then you have to park somewhere, and then all the feelings, you think you've healed and everything comes rushing back, it's your brain. And why that happens is because when there's heartbreak, it causes a level of separation. And because love affects us in the way that drug addiction affects people, the tenets of, or the cardinal features of an addiction, tolerance, withdrawal, relapse, chances are all three of them have a high chance of happening. Now, tolerance, I'll just explain briefly. Tolerance is when you have something, you take it, you like it. The next time you take it at that same amount, it's okay. But give yourself a couple of months. Like when you're falling in love, when you first meet the person, it's probably okay to just have phone calls. Especially if it's like a long-distance relationship. Later, you want to see the person. Yeah. Your phone call is just not enough for you again. Yeah. It doesn't cut. You want to see the person. Then you're okay with spending time in restaurants. Then that's not enough. You want to go to that person's house. You want more and more of that thing you love. The same way with maybe something like cocaine. You take it now, you take it now. But that amount is not enough again. No, you want a higher one. You want a higher one. You want a higher one. Mm. And that's, so imagine, especially if you've not, and that's where time is important. So if you've spent a lot of time, that's why if someone expresses heartbreak over a relationship of 2-3 weeks, they can just leave them and just straight away. Within 2 weeks, they are, you know, back, strong, independent woman. Yeah. But if the relationship has been for 5 years, you may see that some of them act like they are running mental at some point, especially if it was broken violently. Maybe they caught the person cheating or found out the person is maybe a really horrible. Yeah, so tolerance, then withdrawal, that's when you are not getting that drug. And in this case, the drug is the person. The drug is the love. And that is one of the things that happens in a breakup or when someone has heartbreak. So you're not getting that person again, and then you start missing the person so ever so strongly. In fact, heartbreaks, we've realized that the parts of the brain that are linked to deep attachment are activated when someone is going through a heartbreak. Mm. So deep attachment, that means you don't just like something, you are deeply connected to that thing. In fact, a deep romantic relationship has been likened to the bond between mother and child. So imagine separating. You know what happens if you separate a child from the mother? Mm-hmm. Even if they're in the same hospital, and maybe the child needs to be in a different department. Yeah. There's a way to be doing the mother. Yeah. Not to now talk of maybe a relationship of 5-6 years. Yeah. So there is that withdrawal phase. And then another part of the brain is activated during heartbreak. And that is the part of the brain that makes us now start considering if we should risk it all. What I mean by that is the part of the brain that helps us to start considering whether we should take actions that can lead to either great profits or gains or great loss. Mm-hmm. That's when people are now wondering, should I go back? What's the worst that will happen if I go back? Can I gain something by going back? Mm-hmm. Should I just leave it? I've spent 5 years. Would I leave this person after 5 years of my life? I was 22 when I met him. Now I'm 27. Will I find someone else? I should just stay here. Maybe he will change. Maybe you start making decisions that the ultimate reality that decision would lead to is whether great profit or great loss. It's the same part of the brain that maybe if someone wants to make a big financial decision, is activated in heartbreak. And that's why it is a dicey period. And it's a period where I think many people need guidance. Many people need a strong support system. Because if not, in as much as the breakup has happened, because of the things going on in the brain, the withdrawal, and then the part of the brain that activated, there is a chance that is a point in their lives where they are going to make a big decision. The first big decision was the separation.
Mm-hmm.
But what happens in that heartbreak is also a part where they will decide whether to go back or to forge ahead.
Mm. When you're saying the part of deep commitment is activated, so was it that it wasn't activated when the relationship was on? It did get heightened because of the separation.
So it was, that's actually a very brilliant question. So deep attachment was always activated. But with the separation, I think what I'm trying to say is with the separation, what would have helped is if after separation, the part of deep attachment dies or deactivates.
Yes, okay. But it doesn't.
It's there.
Mm.
It's fresh. It's like a wound.
Mm.
So they are feeling it. In fact, that's what I find. It's a psychiatry. We know that it is normal for people to have transient hallucinations of people that they were deeply in love with. Mm. So you find a mother who has lost a son, maybe she steps out of the car and then for a fleeting second, she sees someone that looks just like the son crossing the road.
Yes.
And then she's running. Lagbaja, she wants to, well, it's not there. It's the type of hallucination that is normal during the grieving process.
Wow.
That's the type of, there's such a strong bond that it feels just like the person is there. To the extent that they see the person or they hear the person's voice and then they have to turn and wonder, oh, okay. So, and it's quite common, especially with those who have strong bonds that have lasted over time. Is a very important thing in relationships.
Yeah.
In the right relationship, it's the absolute strength. Now, in the wrong relationship it's what you don't want to do. So if maybe a man has been married to his wife for 40 years and then maybe suddenly she dies of cancer and then he's heartbroken, chances are he would see her several times, hear her voice, her scent. He may even feel her hair. It's just, and it's normal because the brain is longing for something that is no more there. So it's creating it for that person. Maybe creating it will give that person some temporary sense of relief. And that's why, and to an extent, even this type of hallucinations help people. Maybe you've heard of people who maybe lost, they had a big fight with a loved one. Before they could settle the fight, the person suddenly maybe had an accident and died. And then in a dream, they see the person and they're able to get some closure because the person in the dream tells them, I'm not angry with you. I am in a better place. I love you. I don't want you to continue to. I did a post on my Instagram on heartbreak. And the number of people that told me about having dreams where they were finally able to reconcile with a loved one and how that gave them a sense of relief. So that is how heartbreak, because when it comes to grief and heartbreak, the brain may not be able to tell the difference. It's the same separation.
So this is why heartbreak hurts, right?
Yes.
These are things that but why do people go back to their exes?
So people go back to their exes, this is very important. People go back to their exes because that separation period is just too much for them to bear. And people go back to the exes because love is a drug. People go back to the exes for the same reason why people go back to cocaine or heroin or alcohol after they've said they are not going back. Because when they said, I'm not doing this again, they were using the big part of the brain I mentioned, the part where they are in control, the part that helps with them. Decision-making and planning. Yeah. They've planned that, okay, I'm not doing this. I'm going to block this person on WhatsApp. I'm going to block this person on Facebook.
Yeah.
And then one day comes where they are feeling really, really weak or vulnerable because they miss this person. Now, if let's say it was death that caused the separation, they know that no matter how much I miss this person,
I'm not going to see them again.
In fact, some people long to see them so much that they start considering killing themselves.
So that
maybe that would take so they can be rejoined. We know the story of Romeo and Juliet, so they can be rejoined with.
Yeah.
That is how
some people go to psychics.
Exactly. Some people go to psychics to maybe see the person and then they get exposed to all sorts of things.
Demonic
So that's why people go back. Because, I mean, with an ex, you maybe, God help you, you're not in the same university with the person. Or you're in the same class, you're taking the same lectures, or in the same office or bank.
Wow.
And then you're seeing the person and maybe the person is now with another person and then it's causing some kind of pain, making you have questions that am I not enough? What is it? Should I get this person back? Can I deal with this? And then the pain at that point is so fresh that it feels like you may never break free. But I think what I would like to tell people is, when you are experiencing that, when you're experiencing the withdrawal, having a strong support structure, like family, friends, church, wherever it is, mm-hmm. can go a long way. Maintaining that level of separation and distance from that person can go a long way and would also give you the opportunity to build new relationships. Now, I'm not saying when you break up for someone, in order to deal with the pain, jump into the next person who is coming for you. No, because rebound relationships tend to fail. Yeah, because you are with that person just to soothe your pain. Yeah. You are not going in to add to someone's life. You are going just so that maybe the person can give you. And it never really works. So it's best to get through the process of healing, support yourself, and give yourself time. Keep yourself busy. Go to work. Because the more you stay, the more you start reminiscing on what you don't have. So yeah, but just to answer your question, that's why people go back. Because of that strong sense of separation, the emotional pain, and the longing they have for the person. Love, for all intents and purposes, is just like a drug.
Wow. Because this issue of heartbreak, you know, it's not, some people don't address it. It's not commonly spoken about. Yes. So most people go through heartbreaks alone, you know, and I've had to deal with a lot of people. In fact, that led us to create a course. It should be launching sometime in this coming month or thereabout, you know, where people can go through processes that will help them deal with heartbreak. We're able to work with some people that went through heartbreak, and today some of them are getting married. They shared this testimony how that time when they were feeling that my life is over, but today they've been able to overcome that, and some of them are getting married now, some of them are gotten married, and you know, they've been able to bounce back from it. So it's possible to bounce back from a heartbreak. If you're watching us today and you're going through a heartbreak and you feel like all your life is gone and your life is shattered, well, we're here to tell you that it's not, and that you can actually heal, you can actually love again. If you can, I will encourage you to take our course. Details will be on the screen. Please take our course, very helpful. Then we also have a program coming up. It's titled Heal. It's an annual program we have for women called Manual, and the speakers this year is Keyshawn Scott. Keyshawn Scott is like the expert on breakup in America. Then we have Coach Lara, amazing lady. She has been through about 15 relationships, 14 abortions, some crazy stuff that she has healed from, you know, and she's helping ladies today to heal. So, because it's not even just breakup that people need to heal from. Some people have gone through other forms of trauma that is affecting, you know, the way I normally say it in relationship palette is that, you know, you're punishing your next because of the crimes of your ex.
Yes.
Because sometimes you're carrying baggage
into the next thing.
From that past relationship to the next one. So in my experience, there's nothing as powerful as a healed person in a relationship. You know, sometimes the relationship is not bad. It's just two people involved, or sometimes one person is not healed. So the baggage they're bringing is just too much that is affecting the relationship itself or the marriage. And in a way, all of us have been through some form of trauma. All of us need some form of healing. You know, as long as you're born on this earth, the earth is no more perfect the way God made it. So somehow you're going to encounter some form of trauma, but healing is possible. And we must all be as healed as we can be to, you know, have better relationships.
Absolutely.
You know? Yeah. So my next question here is, so are some people more emotionally resilient than others?
That's an interesting one. Here's why. In my training to be a psychiatrist, one thing we see with a lot of people who maybe have some mental health disorder or the other is a history of what we call ACEs. That's ACE, adverse childhood experiences. Now, there's a personality disorder we call emotionally unstable personality disorder. One of the things about them is they, especially, the emotional, EUPD. One thing about them is when dealing with people, they tend not to have strong emotional connections. They tend to be impulsive. That means they can, you know, when you think of people who may just, they're in a car. Let me give this example. In a car with maybe it's the boyfriend or the husband, and they're in an argument, and as the car is moving, because they want to leave that environment, they just open the door and move out of a moving car.
Wow.
Not at that point, they're not thinking in terms of this is a moving car I'm on the expressway. They feel such a strong surge of maybe anger or a strong surge to just escape from situation that they just move into oncoming traffic. They are emotionally unstable. One of the things, and that's just one out of several personalities, so one of the things we've noticed with several disorders is people who have been through something growing up. Maybe a father who abused them, or a mother who abused them, maybe sexually, physically, or maybe a teacher. It is usually due to trauma. There's usually a link with trauma in childhood.
Wow.
Now, this kind of people may find it hard to be emotionally resilient. They may find it hard to go through the vigors of a marriage, because every marriage has, you know, its dips. It's not what you see on Instagram, where people are in Seychelles today, and next minute they're in Bahamas.
Yeah.
You know, real life isn't that way, right? It comes with its ups. Not saying it's not pleasant. In the long run, and as a whole, marriage is supposed to be pleasurable, but it has its dips because you are two imperfect people. Yes. So, with them, they may find it, people like that, people who have been through some kind of adverse childhood experiences, they may find it difficult to deal with real life situations in a healthy manner. And so, yes, some people are less resilient than others for several reasons, especially something like people who have been through some trauma in the past. It may not even be in childhood. It may be something that happened to maybe we use the example of a church sister who fell into a relationship with the wrong kind of person, and she learned about life not being black and white from that relationship. Sure. And then she doesn't heal, like you said, doesn't heal properly, doesn't take out time to find closure and help her brain move to the next chapter, but takes the hurt from the old chapter into a new chapter. She would tend to start seeing the new chapter through the lens of the old chapter.
Mm.
And so the paranoia she had from her ex, she starts to see this new person and puts him under undue pressure. In fact, one of the things we see with people with that emotional unstable personality disorder is they do what we call splitting. So they tend to see people as either absolutely good or absolutely evil.
Bad,
so if they don't get what they want from you, you suddenly become like the devil in their eyes.
Mm.
And there are several people, many people out there with some kind of, you know, baggage. Like we say. So, some people who maybe either have not experienced significant trauma, or maybe if they've experienced it but healed from it, which is where most people will fall into, they tend to be more resilient than those who are carrying baggage.
Okay, but is it also possible that apart from the trauma, is it possible that some people are just not as strong emotionally? Because physically, I know this is so. Physically, some people just have more endurance than other people.
Others. Mm-hmm.
You know, they can cope through some things more than other people. So is that the same emotionally? Are there people that generally, as in two people, maybe with the same background, same kind of past experiences, they face the same kind of challenge, and one is faring better with what has happened, and the other one is totally broken down?
Flawed by it. So the reason why I love that question is because at the moment, research is actually being done into that on different fronts. Because we know the answer. The answer is two people who have faced very similar circumstances, but maybe they have different biological makeups. One may thrive and be better off because of that difficulty. The other person may crumble under the pressure.
Yeah.
The research now is trying to find out why this is.
Yeah.
So yes, some people appear to be more resilient than others. But as to why, to an extent, we found some biological links, some social links, cultural, but the exact reason why is still up in the air. But we know that you can put two people, you can put twins who were born, never separated, went to same primary school, secondary school, same amount of love from father, same amount of love from father and mother, and then they face the same situation. One thrives, sees the optimistic aspect of things, the other one crumbles under it. But as to the exact reason why, know, research is still divided.
Okay, so if somebody, now I'll ask this first. So think like abandonment, because some people have the approach of, you don't leave me, if you leave me, I'm finished, I'm nobody. Why do some people have that serious fear of, you know, abandonment, especially when they've gone through it in the past? How does that affect you in dealing with breakups?
Now, when it comes to fear of abandonment, to an extent, nobody wants to be alone. As human beings, we are designed to be social creatures. If you take a human being, you put the human being alone in a room without anyone to talk to, give a person days, weeks, they start experiencing mental deterioration.
Wow.
Nobody is designed to be in a vacuum.
Even those people that say they like to be alone.
It is a lie. The alone they are saying is, I need some time to myself, exactly. Like introverts. Like, I'm one of those people.
You don't look like that on your Instagram page.
Yeah, before Instagram, he knows me. Before Instagram, Instagram was kind of like a hobby that became serious when people started listening to what I had to say. And I'm like, why are these people listening to me? Exactly. But personally, after this, I'll probably go somewhere and then think and then relax, because I like my personal space. But I'm also aware that I'm a social creature. And if I take it too far with that personal space thing, and I'm kept alone in isolation for long, it is invariably the same thing that will happen. Now, with emotional resilience, it may take longer for some than others.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, what will happen is mental health deterioration, because you were not designed to be in a vacuum all by yourself. With abandonment, why some people may say, don't leave me, the person may feel like they may die, we can see it in two ways. We can see it in, is that just how the person is feeling then? Because like we've said, love can be so strong that it may feel like you cannot. That's why when you hear the lyrics of some songs, they're like, how do I breathe without you?
Yes.
How were you breathing before you saw the person? Were you not breathing when you saw the person?
Very well,
and if it had been, you will still breathe, relax. Yeah. But it may feel that way. And it's common, especially if you are very in touch with your emotions. People who may have some disorders that don't make them in touch with their emotions, like maybe narcissistic disorders, or people like those who have maybe some kind of there's like psychopaths or something, they may not feel up to that extent. But those who are really, really in touch with their emotions, and of course we know when we talk about this, many women are that way. So they may have developed such a strong bond, partly due to the chemicals released in the brain, partly due to interactions and how much time they've invested in that, that they may feel that way. But there's also a group of people who it may be due to some mental health instability. And those people, you tend to see them, the chances of them making a rash decision like jumping off a bridge or slitting their wrist due to a breakup is real.
Wow.
And I've seen them.
Wow.
There's something we call adjustment disorder. So it's when someone goes through a life-changing experience and then the person is trying to adjust, but are not adjusting well. And during that period, I think adjustment disorder is one of the common reasons why people present to the accident and emergency, because they do something that they should not do or that they normally would not do, like slitting wrists. And some of them do it to an extent, maybe like to get the person back. Some of them actually do it to they don't see the point anymore. So yeah, it's when we look at those two kinds of people, that for people that it may feel that way for them, but that's because they are invested in that relationship. And there's some people that already have an underlying mental health problem, and that separation is just the word? Icing on the cake, or just the straw that broke the camel's back.
Wow.
Because they are unstable. And that person, they've attached their fragile stability to that person. So it's like, do you have a house of cards and you remove one?
Yeah, because there's some people that actually go and kill the person or do some drastic thing.
Crimes of passion.
Yeah.
In fact, we see that one of the things we look at in forensic psychiatry, when maybe those with psychiatric instability perform crimes. And a crime of passion is, but let me, there's a syndrome. Mm-hmm. There's a syndrome called Othello syndrome. When I talked about it, many women in the comment section were like, if I say I get this, it's like I have this. Othello syndrome is where people have a morbid fear that their partner is cheating on them. It is morbid jealousy.
All women have that one.
But when you hear the characteristics, you will see that you may have it up to a certain extent. You may have something similar, but with Othello's, they're the kind of people that... So I see how you were with your phone. Yeah, mm-hmm. like this.
Yeah.
They want to see what you're talking to. If they see a woman's name, they may get violent. They don't know
anything yet.
No evidence to support it. No evidence to support it. And then maybe you drive out. And then driving behind you, wanting to see who you're going with. Or you come in and they're like, where were you? Is it this? Or this catch a faint smell of perfume on your body. And maybe it's your own perfume, but the smell, you know, perfume, the smell changes with time. And then they're like, who's perfume? And then it's all just linked. There's a short distance between suspicion and some level of aggression. Othello syndrome. Now, when you look at it in this, every human being in love, because with love, we want our own person. So there's some element of jealousy when we suspect that that craving of wanting your own person is not being met. But with Othello syndrome, the reaction, the fear is a morbid fear. But when we say morbid, that means we are linking it to a disease. So it is a morbid fear of being cheated on, of being disappointed in love. And one thing that happens with Othello syndrome is they may end up committing crimes of passion.
Mm.
If I can't have her, nobody else will.
It's very common.
It is more common than people
think. Talk about, breakfast can turn to dinner.
To the last supper.
Yes, I'm telling you. Serious matter. Okay, so a word of advice for somebody that is dealing with a breakup. If you want to give them a quick word of advice, this Valentine's season is coming. Somebody has broken up somebody, we are sure. Either because they don't want to give gift or because they find out that they are the side chick and not the main chick or whatever. One quick advice you can give to somebody.
If I'm going to, if you are going to take anything from this, is this. When you are going through a breakup, it feels like it would genuinely, you will be convinced that you may never come out of it. That, to an extent, is just your primitive brain talking.
Yeah.
One thing I can tell you, and one thing a lot of people will tell you, is that it may feel that way, but it is not that way. The same way it took time to get such a strong bond that you feel you can't live without, is the same way to take time and doing the right, taking the right steps to come out of it, to the point that many people even look back on the person that they wanted to kill themselves over. And they're like, how on earth did I think I wanted to spend the rest of my life with this person? Because while separation may feel like you've lost something, getting the perspective that it is the opportunity to gain something better. Or someone better or get more in line with what you want to do with your life, seeing it that way, your mindset, using that big part of your brain to override, it's easier said than done. Trust me, I know. Yes. I've experienced my own first share of heartbreaks. Yeah. So I know how it feels. Like the world is going to come to an end. It's not. The world was here before you. The world will most likely still be here after you.
Yeah.
Your job is to make sure you heal properly, separate properly in a healthy fashion, and open yourself up to new opportunities and new people.
Yeah. Okay, so then that issue of when people are going through that breakup, they focus on only the good things. And sometimes those good things are not that much.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes the relationship as a whole was not good. Because I did a video on the fact that good people have some bad things about them. Then bad people have some good things about them. So don't make a decision just based on one side of this thing. Don't say, oh, this person, I've noticed that they have one bad side and I want to count them out. They might be good for you. And they might need you to even help them work on that bad side.
Yeah.
If it's something reasonable, I'm not talking about someone that wants to kill you. Mm. Now, then there's a part of you I also talked about. People that are bad have some good things.
Yeah.
And people that are stuck in these bad relationships, that's what they stay on. Mm-hmm. So he's kind. But maybe he cheats. Maybe he's irresponsible. Maybe he has too many other bad things that you can't live with. You can't definitely live with these things, but you are finding that one remote good thing and you want to, you know, base your decision on that one good thing. Because most people that are divorced or that have really gone through a bad relationship, we can always find one good thing about this guy. You know, there is rare cases where every single thing is bad, even though there are people like that. But but this person, you know, her mind or his mind is going to that one good thing that he can find about this person and he's now attached to it and is not seeing the whole picture that, look, this breakup is actually good for you. So is there something you can say about that?
What I'll say about that is that's where support comes in. There are some things you cannot... let me give an example. We've realized that when someone is depressed, and this is to show you that the way it's happening in your head is not necessarily the way it's actually happening.
That's very
important. We've noticed that when people are depressed, they tend to see things very sad. They tend to remember, the brain now starts to remember mostly the bad things that have happened to them. That's why you find people, especially maybe in an economy where that's not functioning, and you find them complaining about the bad things. And then you may even ask them, is that there's no good thing going on in your life? And they may even say, nothing good is happening, but they are breathing.
Yes.
They have 2 feet. They have 2 hands. They have mouth to express their complaints.
Yeah.
They have a brain to process the complaints. Mm. They have a wife. After a complaint, they'll go and eat her food.
Yeah.
They will hold children, even if they punish the children, but they have children.
Yeah.
So everyone usually has some good and bad, whether in their lives or even in a single person. There's usually some good and some bad. Now, the question is, what can you deal with?
Mm.
What is the deal breaker for you? Because we are different. Everybody has things that they know that, okay, I'm fine with this. I know that I mentioned this relationship as an imperfect person with another imperfect person. By imperfect, I'm talking about character-wise and features, right? What can I live with? What can I not live with? The person who is womanizing may actually be a very, very benevolent person, gives you all the best gifts in the world and everything. The person who is faithful to you, but maybe beating you. Or the person who, maybe what he even does is when he's using the toothpaste, he presses it from the middle and not from the bottom. Or when he has his bath, you see soap lather on the wall. There's some women that just look at it, and once he finishes, they've told him over and over again. Yes. They'll just go on. When he finishes bathing, they'll just pour it. And they've decided that, okay, this is something I can live with. He's a good father to children.
Yes.
He provides. The only thing is when he has his bath or when he eats, the bones are everywhere. They are fine and they clear it. And then the same way, the woman, maybe at night, she snores and is affecting his sleep. But he has decided he has gone to see the doctor. The doctor gave him earplugs. He even went on...
No, but women don't snore now. Women don't snore.
You can't tell them they snore, but... you would tell them, but you just keep it between you and your God. And then you just maybe find the staff way to tell her, okay, babe, it's not that you're snoring, but, you know, it's just... I don't know how you do it. You only speak to lead you. But the thing is, everybody has their good and bad, and it's just up to you to decide, I can live with this, I can't live with this. The problem is when the big part is telling you that I can't live with this, but maybe due to some other things happening, fear of maybe not, you know, you just decide to stay there. And now I'm talking about relationship, because hopefully this is something you've talked about before proceeding into marriage. Right, relationships, and then you look at it, you have those conversations about money, about belief systems, so that you know what you are getting into. You are not overridden by the love and the hormones raging in your body, dopamine, oxytocin, vasopressin, everything just wanting. No, you're not just romantic songs, but you are paying attention. Because like we've said, there's a reason why the part of your brain that is bigger is the part that you are, that controls your voluntary actions and your voluntary thoughts. It's because you are supposed to use it to override, or not just to override, but to complement, because they can actually be complementary. You can actually think logically while still being in love. Love does not necessarily mean that your senses have, even though biologically that's what it's designed to, but there's something that you can use to keep everything in check.
For the person that is breaking up, going through a breakup, that is now focusing on just, that one...
Yeah, a support system is important. Because in the times where you're feeling weak, think about it. Who can support you in these times? Because to be honest, like I said, we are not designed to go through things alone.
No.
Or go through life alone. No one is designed that way. So think about this. Who's your support system? For a lot of people, it's maybe their parents or their siblings, or maybe close friends, or maybe your church, your pastor, the leader of your department, wherever it is you worship or whatever it is. Everyone has social Everyone should have social support systems. And those are the things that can help you through difficult times. So that when you are feeling weak, someone is being strong for you. And then if you are someone who, maybe you're a religious or you're a Christian or a religious person, that can be a time where you are reflecting, you are gaining more knowledge, you are taking in more things.
Yes.
And so let's say you decide, okay, I'm going to read the Bible now, which is something I do personally, but yeah, you can gain knowledge into that part of your brain that you can apply. In fact, to in a certain sense, you may even gain some level of strength. And if not from that, then it could be from hearing the right words, listening to the right things, taking in the right information, like watching pastors' YouTube videos on how to deal with. Like if you are watching this, then you're probably already taking a very good step. So that you know that, okay, all these things are controlled by, to an extent, biology, social circumstances. It may even be due to some level of genetics, how you are built, how you've been made. And then getting the right information with the right support structure and giving yourself time. It's not going to disappear over the weekend, but it will get better.
All right. Amazing. And I usually like to tell people to do the breakup, except for cases where there's an obvious reason why people are breaking up. Maybe one person was cheating or some domestic violence or something like that. In a case where everything looked okay and your partner just says, I'm not more interested in all that, I tell people all the time, don't make a drama on that spot, because nobody breaks up with you at the spur of the moment.
Yeah.
Whoever that person is that is breaking up with you has been emotionally disconnected for a while. They've already decided long ago. They're just waiting for the right time.
Yeah.
So when they tell you, don't, that's not the right place to break now. That's not the right time to tell them why. Tell me all the things I didn't know. They're just going to tell you anything. They're trying to get rid of you. All right, so put yourself together. There's a place to go, like you said, about the support system. There's where to go to be vulnerable. But you don't need to do drama at that point. That person has emotionally disconnected with you a while ago. All right, so pick your lessons. What are the things you can learn now from what you have gone through? What better decisions can you make? You know, like I said, we have a full course that will help you go through this. So the details are on the screen. Please reach out to us. That way you can get help, because a lot of people don't talk about breakup. Who go through breakup in isolation most times? You know, alone. Some of them are even too ashamed.
Yeah.
Because everybody knew us together. You know, I bragged about this relationship. I said it was the love of my life. You know, all those kind of things. So hey, we understand that. So we have counselors and we have a course that can help you go through. And like I said, we've seen many cases where people have come like that and they thought they would never have another chance in love, and today they're getting married or they've gotten married. So hey, trust me, it can never be as bad as you feel.
Yeah.
All right. Your feeling is real, but it's not always right. All right, and don't forget, my book is also out, Heal Before You Deal. All right, it talks about how to handle breakup and how to move on from there. Because we're not just praying that you will heal. We want you to also find love again. All right. So, hey, thank you, Doctor.
Thank you for
sharing today. We have learned a lot about our brains. These are our brains can betray somebody.
I'm telling you, the brains can betray somebody.
And we can't remove it and just continue.
The thing is, with proper mastery of the brain it's actually a plus.
Positive, yes. Yeah. Yes, and that's the whole idea, really. Yeah. And that's what God wants. And that's why knowledge is good.
Yeah.
The more knowledge you have, you can now prepare. You know, and like you mentioned, the reward secretary. You know, sometimes you're the one that determines what reward is to you.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah, so all these are things that we use to help people manage their feelings. You know, when you understand what is a reward to you, if peace is a reward to you, it begins to inform how you feel about certain people. Because this person is not going to get me to my reward.
Yeah.
This person is going to be trouble. You know, if spirituality is your reward system, this is why if you are somebody like that, you find spiritual people attractive. You know, meanwhile, if money is your reward, then you find rich people attractive. So even when they're stupid, even when they're mad, even when they're dangerous,
they
have money, because your brain is wired.
In fact, I read a book, just to buttress what you've said, and social media, when people go on social media, now, 10, 15 years ago, we did not have
this problem.
But now, found out that social media is one of the strongest determinants, one of the things that can release dopamine.
Yes. Yes.
And that's because when you go and you see maybe people liking and commenting, you just have that surge.
It's a high, and then
you want to post again. And then when a post doesn't do well, you're feeling that, what happened? Did I know? Some people even delete, say they're not doing it again. They will go back. So what I'm trying to say is, if social media did not exist 15 years ago, but it's causing such a high, it means that you can learn some things to cause that high for you.
Yes.
For some, it's a worship session.
Yes.
When they are worshiping, and then for some, it's a brilliant book.
Yes.
For some, we'll go maybe into negative things or have negative, and this, it's something really bad that causes that high. In fact, for some people, it's raping someone.
Yes.
That gives them pleasure. Consensual sex is not pleasant.
Pleasurable, yes, it's true.
I mean, you find some people who, okay, maybe I should, some really nasty things. But the point is, like Pastor has said, you can make a conscious effort to determine to a great extent what it is that causes your high.
Yeah.
And if it's something positive, like strengthening your relationship, which already exists, and then that person who you've committed to for life is the source of your high, it's a win-win.
Yeah. And I'm sure we'll still talk later or other times about, you know, because those pathways that have been created to those negative highs, we have to now reroute them.
How to create new neural pathways.
Yes, it's very, very important because some people are just stuck on those negatives. I talk to young people sometimes and they say something like, oh, I want to blow.
Mm.
And I'll be like, why? So I just want to blow. I say, blow for what? You know, because if your aim is just to be popular for the sake of being popular, then it's a trap.
Yeah.
You're going to do anything
to get
popular. I said, no, find how you add value to people. So whether you are popular or not, you are getting your high from actually being a blessing to somebody. And that high can last forever because it's a good thing.
It's a good thing. It's a win-win.
Win-win.
People are blessed. You are blessed. Entire situation, environment is blessed.
And even if you're not popular, you are still making a difference.
Exactly.
But some people just want to be popular. Like you said, social media, for that one, is a different discussion on itself. Because some people just want to blow, just want to be popular for no reason. So they can go into nudity. And the thing about nudity is that once you take off your top a bit, and you have likes increased, you can't do that next week. You have to take off more.
You find yourself doing higher levels of something you should not be doing just to get
those kicks. And it's just a lose-lose. I mean, there's just destruction at the end of it.
Yeah.
So I feel we've not yet seen the full impact
of
the social media thing. We've not yet seen it. In a few years, we'll start seeing the problem, and there will be full hospitals set up treat people that are suffering from social media problems. I think that will still happen because nothing like this ever happened to mankind.
Yeah, in fact, in hospitals, I think recently, if I'm not mistaken, we started considering the possible diagnosis called social media addiction.
I'm telling you, I know that for sure. Because we can't bother with this,
people
I know that
actually addicted to social media at the level of the brain.
Yes. I know it. I definitely get to that. What I'm seeing going on. Nobody wants to work anymore. Nobody's doing anything. Everybody's a content creator, even if they don't have content.
Okay, and they'll be doing, and it can make, and the thing about an addiction is it can make you do, you know, the way someone who is naturally a good person but is addicted to cocaine can harm another person just to get money to satisfy the urge.
Yes.
It's the same way. I mean, when you go on Twitter sometimes and you see how negative, I mean, I see someone who posts the picture of maybe a loved one who died, and then people say some really negative things under. And I'm like, are you saying this just for clout? Yes. Just so that maybe you will trend?
Yes.
And there's some people who specialize in insulting celebrities. You know, all they do is just to insult you, to curse you out. And it's all part of it.
It's interesting. Thank you, Doug.
Thank you for having me.
This was good. Hey, thank you, guys. Please don't forget to subscribe to this channel. Please share, like, and take advantage of the new books we have out. It'll be a blessing to you. All right. Thank you. See you in the next video.
Bye, guys.